if architects and the architectural profession are going to, you know, play the fullest possible role in addressing some of society's biggest problems, then we need a profession that represents the people it's there to serve, the communities that it's there to serve and work alongside.
Welcome to Stand Tall with Rachel Bell, brought to you by Stride Treglown. Stand Tall is conversations with people blazing a trail across property, architecture, engineering and construction. Expect fast-flowing conversations about life, careers and defining moments. And stay tuned for the quickfire questions towards the end for pearls of wisdom, advice and humour. Today I'm joined by Robbie Turner, Director of Inclusion and Diversity at the Royal Institute of British Architects. He was appointed by the RIBA in November 2022 to ensure the architecture profession and its systems and structures are underpinned by inclusive values, actions and policies. Robbie is a pharmacist by trade with extensive experience in pharmaceutical management. In 2018, he became Executive Director of Member Experience at the Royal Pharmaceutical Society and spent 4 years developing their Equality, Diversity and Inclusion, or EDI, strategy. Only months into his current role with the RIBA and as a newcomer to the industry, I was really keen to chat to Robbie about his move into architecture, his first impressions of the profession and the current state of EDI, as well as his plans to deliver positive change over the coming years. Lots to cover, so let's meet Robbie. Welcome, Robbie. Really great to have you as my guest today. It was fantastic to meet you on the recent Women in Property International Women's Day event that we held, and I thought you'd be an amazing guest. So thank you for joining us and welcome to Stand Tall. I wonder if you could just give us a little bit of an overview of your role currently and who you are.
Thank you, Rachel. It was absolutely lovely to meet you as well. And thank you for the kind welcome. That's really appreciated. So, as you say, my name is Robbie. I am Director of Inclusion and Diversity at the Royal Institute of British Architects, or REBA, and have been there for, let me work out, probably just over four and a half months. So started in the middle of November. And my role is facilitating, you know, and leading the work that we do at REBA to ensure that we've got a profession that is best placed, I think, to meet the needs of society, recognizing that if architects and the architectural profession are going to, you know, play the fullest possible role in addressing some of societal's biggest problems, then we need a profession that represents the people it's there to serve, the communities that it's there to serve and work alongside. So I'm delighted that REBA have understood that and really embraced that as a role.
So yeah, very new into the role, and there's loads of areas that we can dive into in a bit. But I wonder initially if you want to just talk through your background in the pharmaceutical industry and how you ended up doing that, and maybe we'll come on to then sort of some lessons learned that you're bringing into your role now.
So I'm a pharmacist by trade, so a healthcare professional. So, you know, that I think has given me a really clear insight into, you know, the impacts on people's health and well-being. So I live in Leeds, went to school in Leeds and started working in a community pharmacy. I think I was about 16 at the time, and did that as a Saturday and Sunday job, and quite rapidly decided that I had a love for that interaction with people, that ability that the pharmacy profession gives you to share advice and to work with, you know, with families and individuals to improve their insight into how to make their lives healthier. And went to university in Bradford. And my first job was in Bradford as well, in a really socially deprived area of central Bradford. And I think I rapidly saw that what made people healthy, what made people feel good about themselves, that sense of well-being, wasn't in any way a product of choices that people were obviously making. It was a product of their surrounding, the environment that they lived in, the environment that they accessed healthcare in. And I think now reflecting back, you know, 20, 5 years later, also the built environment that they lived in. And so from that really early age of working in healthcare in Bradford, recognizing that the system that we've got around people has a huge impact on their life chances and their ability to play the role that they want to play in a productive and positive society. So when you said the thing that I've learned, you know, was from that really first job that I had working as a healthcare professional. And I think that's followed me through life. And from there, I quite rapidly moved into senior management roles, so operational management, and then into the world of membership organizations. Went to be director for England at the Royal Pharmaceutical Society, and then alongside undertaking an MBA, was promoted and was then responsible for all of sort of like the membership functions, marketing, communications, policy and strategy at the Royal Pharmaceutical Society. But also then was responsible for our work on inclusion and diversity, which will be interesting for us to touch on about how that impacted me as well.
And was it the fact, going back to then your, you know, your early years of recognising how much a built environment around you can help support a better thriving life, that influenced your decision to move to the RIBA, that you felt that that could make a difference? Or what was the kind of transition between two very different industries to then think, actually, there are lessons to be learned, things that you can move from one to the other?
Well, pharmacy is a very different profession to architecture. You know, I'm preaching to converted when I'm speaking to architects about that. But the profession of pharmacy is hugely diverse. It's 66% female, 44% from Black, Asian or minority ethnic heritage and background. So the diversity of the profession is huge. The challenge that I saw when I got my role at the Royal Pharmaceutical Society was that actually that didn't then equate to true inclusion. It didn't equate to a feeling that individuals, despite the things that made them different, despite those, were celebrated, were valued, were recognized for the impact that they could bring, for the benefits that they could bring into what at that point were traditional leadership roles. So when you looked at pharmacy, you know, the traditional leadership roles were white men, by and large, and wasn't reflective of the profession. And so quite rapidly on taking my role, I originated a big piece of strategy work around an inclusion and diversity strategy for the profession, built, you know, really alongside the profession, and lots of people were involved in developing that, and then also developing an action plan that was, you know, really designed to help people feel that they belong to the profession. Too many people had felt unrepresented, marginalized across the profession. And this strategy was designed to start to address that, to make a real and meaningful impact to the lived experience of people, both who were currently part of the profession, but who were also, you know, due to be entering the profession, who were students or who were considering entering the profession. So that work started probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and I reflected that that was, you know, one of the most interesting, fulfilling and rewarding parts of my role, and then left the Royal Pharmaceutical Society. And I think you're probably right that early experience of recognizing the role of people's environment in their life chances certainly played a part of it. But you know, it wasn't that I was looking for a role in the built environment. I think it was the role was around inclusion and diversity in a membership organization, which was really interesting. Being part of a membership organization is quite a different skill set. It's a fairly specialist role, being part of a membership organization, being able to succeed in a membership organization. And that linked with my experience in delivering inclusion and diversity interventions to a profession, I think, was the thing that really attracted me. And then as I started to dig more and more into, you know, what REBA was here to do, what architects did, it really resonated with me. And I think that's when I made that link between those early years of my profession and recognizing that, and actually the impact that I could have in this role, not only on an organization and on a profession, but then on that wider societal impact that the profession brings, you know, really driving improvements for my family, my community, the people I care for, the people I love, and those people who will be around me for years to come. So it's not all altruistic. I certainly recognise the impact that this will have on the people that I care for as well.
It's really interesting just hearing just your approaches to, those different stages, different opportunities, different careers, the things that you were highlighting in the pharmaceutical industry. I'd be really interested to hear, now you're in the construction industry and with the ROBA, what were your kind of first impressions then? You obviously done some research, you knew maybe some of the larger battles and larger kind of industry issues that we're tackling. I wonder, first, now you're in post, how have the first few months been?
I was really welcomed into the organisation, into REBA, and from the very first time I spoke to people, I understood the passion of both the organisation and the people within it to make a difference, to support the profession, to move forward inclusion and diversity, of really driving a more, you know, a fairer profession. And without exception, everybody who I've worked with across the organisation has been in that zone and are looking to do things differently. And the organisation has been through an immense amount of change over the last couple of years. There has been significant movement in both the senior team and in teams across the organisation. And I think even following on from some of those really difficult times or difficult conversations, their commitment to improving the profession and improving our organisation was really clear. So coming into an organisation like that was hugely positive, and I felt really supported. And by and large, my interactions with the profession have been similar. You know, the conversations where I've had the chance to sit down, Rachel, you know, people like yourselves, being part of panels, being part of conversations, you know, I've heard the challenges of the profession. I think there are some big challenges. I think I was surprised perhaps at the underdeveloped nature of the inclusion and diversity conversations that were happening in some areas of the profession, whilst, you know, and I described it in a conversation having earlier this week, you know, there's islands of absolutely excellent practice, islands of practice in organisations, in groups, in grassroots organisations who are pushing this forward, who are doing some phenomenal work. But there are deserts of areas that are really not engaging with inclusion and diversity in a meaningful way. So I certainly see this as a really positive time to be joining in this role. There are lots of things to do. There are lots of challenges, but the cultural aspect of people wanting to do good work and being supportive of each other in that space has been really, really exciting to see.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's a massive kind of task that you feel as though there are lots of different things and lots of things that you could cover. I wonder, where do you start then in terms of, one, getting to know a new industry, and then the enormity of the challenge ahead? How have you kind of approached that initially?
You're right. You know, this is a new industry, and strategies around inclusion and diversity aren't a lift and shift. There are some really clear evidence-based things that we can do, but they need tailoring for individual professions. The language, the taxonomy of how a profession works are different. And so it would have been rash and naive of me to walk in on day one and think that I could start to pontificate about A, what the problems were, and B, what the solutions of those should be. So I'm very grateful of those people across the profession who have met with me, who have shared their views, have shared their ideas about what some of those solutions have been. And that's a culture that we will continue to develop, of working with and alongside the profession, co-creating the solutions that will be most impactful. I listen a lot, and I hear a lot, and I distill a lot. And I think what I'm hearing quite clearly, there are two main things for me in my role and for us at REBA to take forward. And the first of those is us making sure that we're leading by example, that we're modelling good practice. And that's both for our internal teams, and that's what they deserve. You know, our inclusion and diversity processes and systems should always be improving. You know, this is a rapidly changing area that we will continue to develop, but making sure that our teams experience the things that we're talking about externally on behalf of the profession, but also that we are making sure that the things that we do with the profession, on behalf of the profession, in our systems and processes are as equitable as possible, that they've got fairness baked into them. So, for example, you know, mentoring, you know, something that's a bit in its early stages across the profession at the moment. But if we build that, then it's important that we're looking at the inclusivity of that at the very start. So we're making sure that it's woven into the whole of that as a product to ensure that it's doing the right thing. It's moving us to a place where, you know, we are fostering diversity, but making sure that people, when we are recruiting and we're increasing diversity of profession, that diversity is seen as a positive and is felt to be valued. So those are things about, I use the word fixing, but it's not like that. You know, improving, developing, building the organization to live and breathe what we're discussing. So that's one aspect of it. But I think one of the most exciting bits is, you know, I'm a committed supporter of professional leadership bodies. You know, I've spent years embedded in them, and I have, you know, I'm a fellow of my professional leadership body. But I know that regardless of how good a professional leadership body is, you know, if we're going to impact the life of an architect working in a practice, I use this, apologies if there's anybody from Ipswich, but I use it just because it was always a nightmare journey for me when I used to travel there. So Ipswich is my go-to. I could use any town that's probably down a very, very long road and perhaps feels a little bit isolated. If we're to make a publication or make a change at Reba, how is that actually going to impact this architect working in a practice in Ipswich? The lines of distance are so far, not just geographical, that's unlikely to happen. But we need to do that. I know we can only do that by us working as a collective, going back to those things that make membership bodies, professional leadership bodies, it's special, which is collectives of people coming together, wanting to do good work and working through some form of structure to amplify the changes that they want to see. And I think EDI is a prime opportunity for us to really go back to some of that, working, co-creating with our members, with the wider profession. You know, EDI is too important for us to be exclusory in this, but working with the profession, working with the sector that surrounds the profession to say, actually, what are the things that we can change? Who's already doing this really well? And let's come together and then work on how we spread that out. If I was to, you know, start waving bits of paper at practices, that practice in Ipswich, nobody's going to listen. And it's probably not going to be the right thing. But if, Rachel, you know, we're celebrating some of the work that you do in your practice, that has got far more power and more resonance with somebody in a similar position. So the second priority, in a very long-winded answer, sorry, is about us at Reba facilitating that sharing of good practice, of supporting the implementation of that and celebrating where things are working well and making sure that we replicate that as often and as far as possible to improve the life of that individual architect who's working in that practice, regardless of whether it's Ipswich or wherever else it is. Big call out to Ipswich.
I think it's really fundamental, isn't it, to think about the people in the ROBA, members, people in the industry, and fundamentally, what does it mean for those day-to-day in their roles? And I mean, there's a lot focused on the entry into the industry and that kind of, I suppose, the privilege factor of one being knowledgeable about the industry through friends and family and that kind of drawing into a particular stream of the next generation. But I wonder if that's an area that you've looked into already. There's a lot of discussion at the moment about the education into architecture and how that might be changed. But I just wonder if you feel as though it's still quite closed off from a certain kind of broader nature of people that might not know about the industry still. And that's part of the bigger EDI agenda of really just ensuring that it's an industry that people would love to be part of.
And this is something that people have talked with me a lot about, which is that diversifying entry into the profession. And before I move on to that, because, you know, lots of people have talked to me, I think there's some real importance to this. I do worry that we spend a lot of time, valuable time, talking about diversifying entry into the profession when we're not confident that the experience that those people have will be a positive one when they enter the profession. I hear And this is more than anecdote. This is a recurring theme about some of the challenges, the cultural challenges, if you are from a traditionally underrepresented group, particularly in this profession, a marginalized group, the experiences that too many people have are not good enough. And that leaves people to leave. If we don't address that at the same time, you know, this is not a cascade. We don't have to do one and then do the other, but we must before we go out and say, oh, come along and join our architectural profession. It's fantastic. And we'll open the avenues of entry up. We need to make sure that that we're not selling something that we don't necessarily believe in. And I think there's some really good work going on to address that, but we've just got to be mindful of that as well.
I think there's a lot about the culture across the whole industry that's been a big part of even the elements that I've touched upon in the last 10 years of just approaches even to networking events and the change of dynamic in that and the health and well-being aspects. And that is for everyone. It's not just from the approach that I've taken through Women in Property, but yes, the whole cultural impact of the long hours, the expected overtime aspects, all of these types of things affects everyone. And yeah, it's for a number of us to look at and address that, to support those coming through the industry, in the industry at the moment, and to retain them in the industry. So yes, it's a big ask, isn't it, to try and cover a lot of that.
Improving diversity is hugely important. You know, if we're going to do those things that I said at the beginning of, you know, the profession being best equipped, best able to use all of its creative powers, you know, that I've already experienced, those creative powers are going to be, you know, amplified massively if we improve the diversity of the profession. But improving the diversity of the profession does not fix those cultural issues. Just having more people that look different with different experiences is not going to fix that embedded culture. We will need to also address that. And that, if I'm being honest, is probably going to be the really, really hard bit that's going to take all of us working together, all aiming in the same direction to help address. But that, you are completely right to ask the question, because that doesn't mean we shouldn't be also working to address the diversity in the profession. And the way we're going to do that is by the entry routes into the profession. I'm delighted that a significant portion of my conversations are about exactly that, both within the organisation, talking, you know, as I do with colleagues at ARB about their work in improving the diversity of entry into the profession, and also talking with practices who are doing phenomenal work on reaching out to schools, describing to children about actually what architecture is, what a career in the built environment is.
There's a great video that I've used in talks which illustrates a group of children that, like 5 years old, they're asked to illustrate a firefighter and a doctor and a nurse, and they all draw Bob and Dave and Phil, and then they bring in the firefighter, doctor, and they're all female, and the five-year-olds are all stood there absolutely kind of like aghast. But it gets them thinking about these careers at such a young age, and I think that's where you do need to spend some precious time.
I think you're completely right. I think the work that we can do with school-age children, helping them to understand the things that they enjoy, you know, building, creating, developing, can be channeled into being part of a profession that has a huge impact on the way that we each live our lives. And that's a really positive impact. And I see, you know, from the many architects I speak to week in, week out, the passion that they feel for the role that they play, and helping, you know, young children to understand that is going to help to, you know, democratize the profession in a really significant way. Reba are doing a lot of work around that, but I know that there are some amazing bits of work going on about around practices. And this is, it goes back to that idea that there's answers already out there. There's people doing the work. And, you know, my job, Reba's job is going to be to not channel, isn't even the right word, because that sounds a bit like, you know, about the, you know, taking over, but to just help, to be alongside people, to spread that. And I think wherever we look, there are people already doing it. And we just need to make sure there's more people doing it.
I wonder if there is anything that you have seen and you've suddenly thought, oh, that's quite a surprise. Actually, the architectural industry is doing some amazing things. Why haven't they been shouting about this?
There's a couple of things. The first one is some of the amazing work that some of the regions have been doing, the Reba regions. There are some great examples in the north, both the northeast and the northwest, of groups of architects coming together and with some great leadership from within their ranks and developing, you know, events, developing talks, developing, you know, safe spaces for people to come and just to learn, to understand, to hear about other people's experiences. And by doing that, it helps people to put themselves in other people's shoes. And that, by definition, is a huge step forward into making the profession more welcoming. But the other example I'd like to give is a practice who got in touch with me based in Bristol, who were talking to me about the work that they do in outreach to schools, both to primary and secondary schools, doing exactly as we just spoke about, Rachel, describing to school-age children that architecture is a role that you could do. Individual architects and their teams are going in and giving their time into schools for what is not going to bring personal benefit to them. It's not going to bring benefit to their practice. This is done on behalf of the profession, on behalf of, you know, the wider benefit of the profession. That's phenomenal to see. And that demonstrates, you know, that idea that there are people doing amazing work and putting a huge amount of effort into this already.
And I think that's where maybe even just sharing those examples and sharing the approach to how do you do that. I know there's people do that broadly, but sometimes it's about the tools. It's kind of the things that you take, isn't it? It's the type of workshops that you might want to run. I've been part of Fantastic Futures, a week-long careers event for a primary school in Radstock. And it's been incredible to see the children there, where they've had Wessex Water, they've had Westland helicopters in there and various other industries. But yeah, to be in there and talk about architecture, and we've been building the tallest structures. There will be, I'm sure, lots of great examples of other practices doing that.
Yeah. Just on that, for me, because that to me is the prime example of a profession working as a collective. Reba could be twice the size and is not going to have the resources to go out and speak to every primary school. But the profession as a whole, supported by Reba, can. And that's where we're going to make the impact. And that's that thing of, you know, us all working together, because this is such an important area of work.
So what would be your call to action then to practices in terms of how can they help support you in what you are doing today?
Well, I'd maybe just take it down a level, if I may, Rachel, because I think that call to action is important. We'll get there about supporting Reba in our work. But the first thing, I think my call to action would be for everybody across the profession is to educate yourself. You know, this is a space where people are often frightened to talk, frightened to ask questions, frightened of saying the wrong thing. And actually, by not recognizing difference, by not recognizing the things that make us special, actually we are not being respectful of each other as individuals. But that isn't always about asking everybody everything about themselves. In so many things, Google is your friend. There are a raft of books around which you can learn about different people's experiences. Gender parity, there are some amazing books around, you know, how we address the gender pay gap, the struggles that women in all sorts of industries have. So if you're a man who doesn't quite understand what it means to be a woman in the working world, then there are dozens and dozens of books to help you understand the place of race and racism in society. There are amazing books. There's an amazing book called White Fragility that I would urge anybody who, you know, wants to, even if you don't want to learn more about race and racism, then please go and read it, because you will want to learn more after you've read it. So this is an area where people need to go out and actively and proactively explore and broaden their horizons, because then that will make them more aware of things that are going on around them, both in society but also across their teams as well. So my call to action is, if you're going to do one thing, is go to your local bookshop and have a look at a book that will just test you and widen your horizons a bit, because I think that's what we all need to do.
I want to finish on a positive, and I'm really worried that I'm going to finish on a negative by asking around, you know, the challenges that the industry is facing at the moment. What everyone, no matter what industry they're facing, in terms of the cost of living and, you know, maybe challenges in the economy. I would hate to say that EDI might be one of those things that is kind of put into the too difficult draw. You know, it might cost more because of training and various other things that people need to bring in. But I wonder what would be the kind of the easy wins, the measures that you think an architectural practice could introduce in terms of making sure that EDI is kept front and centre?
Yeah, I think you're right. And we see this, you know, EDI fatigue, which is, we've spoken about EDI, we've done it, you know, and it didn't give us, you know, we've still got a gender pay gap. We've been talking about gender pay gaps for 5 years. Let's not bother anymore. And that's a really easy rut for people to get into. And I understand that. And part of the role of people like me is to just help people to keep their heads up and keep moving forward, because giving up is not an option. The biggest thing I think that practices can do if they're starting to move into that is mobilize the people who are part of their practice. Because actually we know that by doing good work through community groups, and that doesn't need to be, you don't need to have five community groups looking at lots of different things. You can pull together people of, actually, who wants to just come with us and do some work around improving EDI or improving our corporate social responsibility of going and working with a local charity, or pulling together people who just want to do that bit extra around something that delivers really good social value into the organization. There's some altruism to that, but there is also that whole development opportunity of people learning new skills that I think is almost exclusively a really positive experience, both for an organization and the people who are part of it.
That's brilliant, Robbie. We have a group called Stride Together, and we're doing many things like that, being led by one of the associates in the firm. So yeah, it's great to hear. I wonder if we just finally look at, where do you kind of see yourself in, say, 5 years' time? What do you want to have achieved? What would be your kind of idea of not necessarily success, but you kind of think, I've actually made a difference there, the positive impact that you've had on the industry?
Yeah, so this is something I reflect on quite often, particularly when you're starting a role like this in a new industry. And I think we'll need results. And actually, this is often about data, and it can be really tempting in an EDI space to talk in, you know, very generalistic language. But we need to have closed the gender pay gap. We need to have closed the ethnicity pay gap. We need to have started benchmarking and moving towards closing the disability and LGBTQ plus pay gap. You know, they are really clear indicators of where we need to be as a society, as a profession, as individual organisations, regardless of size. So I think there is some really specific criteria for success. There are a whole raft of things that go around that, but that there are some clear metrics of success, and that's what I'll be aiming towards, alongside some of those cultural aspects of that we're all being kinder to each other. Kind is an underused word. It's not about being nice, but about being kind, that equitable profession where people are valued. It's harder to measure, but that idea that we are able to have frank and honest conversations about the issues using words like racism, misogyny, homophobia, ableism, where they exist, rather than what tends to happen at the moment, which is, oh, we can't talk about it because it makes everybody feel bad. Well, the words might make people feel bad. They don't make people feel as bad as when people are experiencing those words. So we need to get to a place, and I'd hope to get there a lot quicker than 5 years, where we can talk about the issues in a full and frank way so that we can actually start to move the dial on addressing those issues. Because unless we address them head on and acknowledge them head on, then we'll continue to sort of like tweak around the edges, and we won't make the scale of change at the rate of change that we need to make people's lived experience of the profession better.
Thank you, Robbie. I think there's some really useful points there for everyone to pick up on and support you in taking, you know, your ambitions and supporting the RIBA going forward and finding that belonging to the profession and also thriving in the places that we're actually developing, designing and building. I'm going to ask my three final questions of all my guests. So my mantra is stand tall. And I wonder if you live by a mantra.
Yeah, be kind. And be kind is hugely important because these are difficult topics that lots of people find a challenge. But if we come to them from a position of kindness, that isn't the same as be nice to a racist. It's be kind. And if we put that as a central mantra and we come from a position of being kind, then we can move the conversation forward.
And I started the year with one word. That word is simplicity. It's been very challenging so far, but I wonder if you live by one word, or if you had one word to go forward in the next few months, what would that be?
Oh yeah, it'd be tenacity, because this is, it's hard and these are complex issues. And unless you have a degree of tenacity, then it's easy to give up or easy to just gloss over things. So tenacity is the word of the next 6 months at least.
And what would be your one call to action to close us today? What would be that one thing that you'd love people to start to do or think about?
I think it's that idea I touched on a little bit earlier on, which is about people educating themselves, about people, you know, going and reading, going and expanding your horizons, experiencing something that you haven't experienced before, putting yourself in situations that might feel a bit challenging to begin with. That's the only way we grow as people, we develop as people, and it's the only way we're going to make other people's lived experience who are in our orbit, who are around us, better and happier and just more fulfilling.
Many thanks, Robbie. Just before we say goodbye, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you on social media or reach out to you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter. So it's the handle is Robbie M. Turner. And you can also find me on LinkedIn, Robbie Turner.
Thank you, Robbie. Really good to have a chat today. Thanks once again to Robbie for joining me today. As a newcomer to the industry, I found it fascinating to hear about his first impressions of architecture and his take on the current state of EDI. Whilst there are clearly huge challenges ahead, it's encouraging to hear that Robbie has already met with so many people across the UK that are passionate about supporting and driving forward inclusion and diversity. Robbie has kindly provided us with a reading list, so if you're keen to learn more about EDI, head over to the show notes. Thanks to Stride Treglown for sponsoring this podcast. And if you want any further information on this podcast or Stride Treglown, then please visit stridetreglown.com and at Stride Treglown on social media. And you can follow me and let me know what you think of the show at RachelJ_Bell across Twitter and Instagram. Stand tall and talk soon.